Namaste, Jai Ma. So as part of the series on collected works of the mother, we take up today. In my reading, a most fascinating volume. Collected works of the mother, volume 3 is also very fascinating. But it's more like the basics of sadhana. And if one wants to understand a little more advanced aspects of the sadhana, then volume 9 forms a very good companion volume. Everything is precious, everything is wonderful, but otherwise, especially, because 56, as we know, the supramental manifestation took place. And then we see hints and glimpses in volume 8, where the mother is giving some little bit of revelation about what the supramental world will be like. But here she begins to open a wide door. What is the old world? What is the new world? What is physical transformation? She is giving us glimpses. What is her plan? What is her agenda? What is she doing? What she expects from us? All this is here. It's amazing. That's why I won't rush through this volume, but go probably a little bit slowly. In this volume also, because mother takes up thoughts and glimpses of Sri Aurobindo, the later part. But she also takes up, portions of the Life Divine also. But she also takes up the supramental manifestation. These are the last writings of Sri Aurobindo. I mean, if you leave aside Savitri and maybe an odd letter which she would have written. But otherwise, 49 to 50, Sri Aurobindo wrote this series of essays for the bulletin of Sri Aurobindo International Education Center. And at mother's behest, because by then he was not writing any essays and all these things. So he started writing, and it was primarily because people didn't understand the need of physical culture. And they were also, and we'll see it all here. So when she started engaging so much in the playground activities, and even more and more, so people thought that somewhere the sadhana is losing track. Great people. Because they felt that sadhana equal to meditation. And so mother even explains that we have this old idea about yoga, about sadhana, how things have changed. Practically, it takes up every aspect. It like lays the fundamental foundations of the next level. So it's like an orientation program for the next level of yoga. So there is a very interesting, on 2nd January itself, very interesting conversation, where she says that it is not a crucified but a glorified body that will save the world. So the background was that coming from a Christian background, somebody had sent an exhibition. And naturally the person was disturbed. War is happening, and war has been happening always on planet Earth. So much has been happening. So with the Christian piety, one was filled with all this anguish and pain. And in a goodwill gesture wanted that, you know, things should become better, they should cease, they should not be the way they are, with a lot of goodwill. And so you know what happens with that goodwill, like we should do something. Now, invariably we should do something means the perpetrators of evil, they don't have any such concept. So often I say in the Indian context that everybody keeps saying that, you know, Hindus should be tolerant, Hindus should be like this, Hindus should be... We understand, we believe in it, that everybody should be equal. But it is the perpetrators of the problem creators who has to understand it. So it keeps swinging, you know, from one side to another. So she says that this is a kind of weak approach. And you cannot confront evil with weakness. Your weakness is, I won't fight you, I can't fight you. But see, be a good guy. It's not good. It's not very nice that, you know, you are the way you are. You should become a good person. She says it's a very weak approach. This doesn't really help. So what's going to help? Should we fight? She doesn't give that solution. She says evolve and change into a glorious body to the next level. And that will have a power, because when people understand that there is so much more than religion, than ideologies, then they begin to change. So this is a very beautiful little conversation, and I'll just read a small little part of it. And she says, naturally, there is the same idea in India, this idea of the complete renunciation of all physical reality, the profound contempt for the material world, which is considered an illusion and a falsehood. That leaves, as Sri Aurobindo used to say, the field free to the sovereign sway of the adverse forces. So we see that in Mahabharata also, this is the same idea. That I renounce the kingdom, renounce the world. Okay, they are evil, but how am I better if I also fight them? So this tendency is a very dangerous tendency. Recently somebody wrote to me a letter saying, ki, isn't Mahabharata all about, Draupadi is the Kundalini Shakti and the Pandavas are the five elements, etc., entire symbolic. I said, you'll rob the Mahabharata of most of its meaning if you interpret like that. Because then it means you are saying it's all something within. As to outer war, all this, we should not engage in it. Same way people explain the Gita, and there are people who have explained like that. And unfortunately, it was by some Paramahans Yogiji, so I didn't directly contradict, but I said, see, if you do this, first of all, it's not going also with the basic story. They are not five elemental powers. Each one is representing a Godhead whose ansha is in the person. But that apart, we have this tendency that this is evil, you try to do good, but it doesn't work out, so ultimately renounce. So the mother is saying it's a very weak approach because it leaves the earth progressively in the hands of the adverse forces. And that's what has happened in India. Because until now, evil has been opposed by weakness. By a spiritual force without any power for transformation in the material world. So you can't change evil. You are really supplicating to them. But you don't have the power to change. So how will this help? This tremendous effort of goodwill has ended only in deplorable failure and left the world in the same state of misery and corruption and falsehood. To put it otherwise, a spiritual force which would be capable of transforming both the consciousness and the material world, this force is the supramental force. So this is the solution of the mother and Sri Aurobindo. Not like, okay, you all should be good guys, don't do like this, don't fight children. It doesn't help, everybody knows this. At the same time, okay, I'll oppose it with material force. Now, okay, you can do it as an exigency, but it is not changing either. So a force which is greater, and that is a supramental force, and then she says something very powerful. It is neither sacrifice, of course sacrifice not in the sense of the Gita, but becoming a martyr. It is neither sacrifice nor renunciation, nor weakness which can bring the victory. It is only delight, a delight which is strength, endurance, supreme courage. So that's what will bring the victory and the change. People should see that, look here, this is the change which is in front of us. Then things have an impact. So the disciple asks, Mother, this new force which is going to act, will it act through individual effort or independently of it? And the mother says something which is so logical and commonsensical anyways. Why this opposition? It acts independently of all individual effort as if automatically in the world, but it creates individual effort and makes use of it. Individual effort is one of its means of action and perhaps the most powerful. So individual effort itself is part of the action of the divine working. And actually even in normal life we can see it. Can we really do something without the divine really? That's why we can tell people that you should do this, do that. Supposing people want to say, it doesn't happen. All the places, everybody says that you should do this, you should do that. But the grace actually ends up, those on whom the grace is active, it will make you do the individual effort. At the same time, you will know that it is a grace that has made me do it. So that's why they are not opposed to each other. So she says, but the problem is, well, if you tell this to people that grace works, so they say, all right, I won't do anything anymore. I am not the one who works, so I won't work any longer. And, very good, the divine can do everything, it is his business, I won't stir anymore. if the credit does not go to me. Now this we don't say openly. Because we want the credit. I did so many hours of pranayam. I did so many hours of meditation. I did so much of japa. And as a result, I had an experience. So when we don't get the credit, when it is said, well, it's the grace that gave you what you got. So it people take it that, okay, in that case, I don't need to do anything. So she says, but the true reaction, the pure reaction, is an enthusiastic impulse of collaboration. To play the game with all the energy, the willpower at the disposal of one's consciousness, in the state one is in, with the feeling of being supported, carried by something infinitely greater than oneself, which makes no mistakes, something which protects you, and at the same time gives you all the necessary strength and uses you as the best instrument. I have not seen a better description of the entire Gita than this one sentence. That you be skilled, perfect in all you are doing. But you know that whatever I may be doing, it's the support from behind. And then you are carried through the world in the best possible way. So I'll read it again, those who want to understand the summary of the Gita. Now you see, here Mother is not saying I'm summarizing Gita. Like in one of our places, she gives, there is a passage in volume 2, which I have observed when we were reading, that if you want to understand what is the translation of Sri Aurobindo's Savitri. Savitri means, Gayatri Mantra of Sri Aurobindo. So this is the translation. But it, she doesn't say, obviously she has not met Sri Aurobindo. But she says that lifting prayer to the sun, which is the source of the intellectual life of the universe. So she has actually done it in a far better way. So here, just for a starter, this is the Gita concised. But the true reaction, the pure reaction, and see, that's why Sri Krishna says, I won't intervene. I'll give counsel. Of course, I'm your friend, mentor. But don't expect me to take out my weapons and fight the war. You have to fight your war. Look at that image now. True collaboration is an enthusiastic impulse of collaboration to play the game with all the energy, the willpower at the disposal of one's consciousness, in the state one is in, with the feeling of being supported, carried by something infinitely greater than oneself, which makes no mistakes, something which protects you, and at the same time, gives you all the necessary strength and uses you as the best instrument. And one feels that, and one feels one is working in security, that one can no longer make any mistakes, that what one does is done with the utmost result and in delight. She says, that is the right movement that we should make. How beautiful. And as I said, so when she speaks of delight, she speaks about God is pure delight, and it's only by that oneness that we can realize. And here she gives again this hint about the new world. So what is this new world? This new orientation, I mean new in its terrestrial realization, must replace all the former spiritual orientations and open the way to the new realization, which will be a supramental realization. So what is this new orientation? That is why I told you last week that only delight, the true divine delight, can bring about the victory. And at one place, she says very interestingly, there in the next volume, so she's asked that, you know, if adverse forces come, what we should do? She says, laugh at the adversary. Another place he speaks of the son of divine laughter. This wonderful delight, which is, you know, the son of divine laughter. And she says that, and for that divine laughter, let us avoid the company of people who are too virtuous. She says, because people who believe perfection equal to virtues, they ultimately start eliminating everything from the universe. Because ultimately, delight is a crown. But on the passage, you will see the mixture. And several places she says that. Because there is a difficulty here, therefore I should not touch it. I should not take this. Why? Because there is a danger. Because there is a possibility of error. But that's not how real life operates. That's not how evolution works. You have to take it, take the wager and the danger. That's how Shivinda puts it. So everybody wants to escape from that. So when I had started these talks, so somebody was once telling me, but you know, so much ego can come. I said, yes, ego can come even if I don't speak. I said, I've heard so many people saying that, oh, that person is only a speaker. I said, so what is it? Is it an egoless state? It's a tremendous ego. That speaker is inferior to the non-speaker. I said, see, ego can come anywhere. Ego is such a masquerade fellow. So when I would go out, same thing used to happen. I said, see, there are people who have great pride in the fact that they never stepped out of Pondicherry. And they have recounted like that. We never went out. I said, very good. I also don't want to step out. I wish I could be in my comfort zone where I didn't have to speak anything. I would also enjoy dining room food and go to playground, be very happy all my life. Who would want to do all this? It's only if the work impels you. So this is something very difficult to explain. So ego can come anywhere, but many people would not engage. There are people who, even for speaking, I've heard, because I know this part, no, my ego can come in. I said, of course it will come in to start with. You can't wait that when I'll be egoless, then I'll do some activity. Then you will not do anything. There is ego in doing dining room work. See, like in many of these, I think I've remarked, Jyoti ki seva. I don't know if people have heard it or not. Jyoti ki seva. So Jyoti ki seva, you know, sometimes big generals in army or businessmen outside the Gurudwara, they do Jyoti ki seva. Means, I will pick up the shoes and keep it. And feel very proud. See, I am such a big man. And I am doing such a humble work. I am sweeping the outside of the ashram every day. And people also remark, you know, every day morning, he used to get up in the morning and sweep the outside of the ashram. I mean, it's a great thing. All these are great things. Every action is beautiful when done with a spirit of service. But this is how the problem is. That we have to understand that we have to go back to this delight of existence in everything. And then he says that naturally there must be no confusion about what this delight is. And that is why from the beginning Sri Aurobindo puts us on our guard, telling us that it is only when one has passed beyond enjoyings that one can enter into bliss. Very interesting. Beyond enjoyings. Not afraid of enjoyings. It's not like I'll not eat, so I'll realize God. You have seen it through and you have gone beyond. Not that you necessarily go through it, but life will take you through it. When you realize the limitations of the frame, at what point you will realize it's a different thing. And then you go beyond it. So, somebody, and then something very beautiful. Perhaps there is more divinity in the spontaneous play of children than in the erudition of the scholar or the asceticism of the saint. If you see the mothers dealing with children, and children here tell me, who are now grown up, they are very old. So they used to tell me, I used to ask them, what you all did? They said, everything. We used to play with mother. I said, what games? Ring-a-ring-a roses. All kinds of games, flower games. Of course, decent games. Only one thing, when a child of 4 or 5 said, you become a horse and I'll ride over you, she said, this I cannot do. That will be, you know, divine is divine. But they used to play below, where now the meditation room is where everybody is so serious and strict, no? They used to play there also, where now the meditation room is Antim Darshan of the mother, that partner. So, only one day mother came and said something. She said, you know, don't make so much noise during the afternoon period. Why? Because Pavitra is sleeping. Because he was having malignancy and it was very, very painful. That too for him. So this is the delight in which people would go, run, meet her. Somebody would fall. Kakeda's example. And father is behind, but he is running and going to the mother. And mother is quietly cleaning and giving chocolates after that. And then she is saying, "Oh, Mopati, don't worry, you'll be fine." And then he comes back with the chocolate, smiling and happy. So this is how the divinity in a child. But of course, people... And then she says, some people, "As for me, I must confess to you that I feel much more essentially myself when I am joyful and when I play in my own way than when I am very grave and very serious. Much more. Grave and serious, that always gives me the impression that I am dragging the weight of all this creation. And so many stories of the mother's play. And people would also play. Nishikanto, that story sometime we have, you know, he was having every possible disease in the world. And he used to say that I am a experimental laboratory of disease. So somebody would come and tell him that my stomach is upset or my knee is spinning. He says, "Yeah, he is feeling only with this. I have all these problems and five more." And yet with diabetes, he would take a handi of rasgulla, go to the lake and, you know, he would get visions, write poems. And people would complain to the mother, and then he would come, mother would ask him, "Nishikant, is it true that you were eating rasgullas?" "Yes, mother." "So, don't you know that it can harm?" "Mother, I am Mahakali's child. Do you want me to be afraid?" "Okay, go." And then such wonderful stories of him. So, he was not, doctors had told him, she should not take any cholesterol. So, that groundnut distribution. So mother would give very fast, very fast. She knew how to pick up, like consciousness in the cells. Katak, 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 like that, you know, very, very swiftly. And he's not supposed to be in the line, so mother will recognize. So he'll put his hand from behind, up one of the sadhaks, hiding behind. And mother would not be looking up. She would come, suddenly she will stop. And then she will put just one groundnut in, one grounded in that palm and go for that. She would smile. So many, many kinds of games she would play. Children would come, even in a room. There is that story of this light day. She would bring the boy, and the boy himself was telling me that light day would go and work in the mother's room, and this boy would be playing outside. And one day the mother heard something. She said, "He is so and so. Why is he outside? Bring him in." So he went inside. So when he went inside, it was strange. He is naturally looking around, this object, that object, everything. And mother would also tell him things. And at the end, she would give a bag full of chocolates and say that, you know, "Don't eat alone, share it and bring back the cover as it is. Then you will get more." And comes. He taught through that. And this boy himself is telling me how, you know, she would... So many of them stories. The other day one where the person in the library... Now, these are not to encourage naughtiness. So, this will be the last one. Okay, but just to understand how she would play to remove this conception of a strict mother superior of the convent school that we have painted her to be. So, there was this boy who was... they used to have some kind of hidden party on top of the library. And nobody would know. These young boys will go. And after eating, they would just throw everything and then come back. So naturally, it was discovered that they have thrown plates and everything. And plates means paper plates or something. So next day when this boy saw the mother or mother saw the boys, he asked, "So, do you have to say something?" "No, mother." "Sure, you don't have to say something." Then he said, confess. He said, "Sorry, mother, I made the mistake." "So do you understand what mistake you made?" So he is quiet. He says, "Mother, we should not have eaten there." He said, "No, you ate. But then why did you allow yourself to be discovered?" "You have thrown? Is this the way?" Naturally. So many stories. Another one which was told to me by Raj Bhai. So Raj Vasisht used to have uncontrollable laughter. Literally, you know, I have seen him. It was difficult to stop him when he would laugh. And there was no time for it. No, that's why if you see him near the samadhi, you don't know now what's going to happen. He would tell you something else, and he would burst into laughter and you can't stop him. So he told me when I was 15, 16, then also I used to have these uncontrollable laughters. And then one day people complained a lot. So Ravindraji also used to laugh. So Ravindraji told him that, you see, now I have to take your complaint to the mother because now people are getting disturbed that you're laughing here, there, samadhi everywhere. So I said, okay. So he went to mother. So he was telling me that when he went to mother, he is waiting, what will mother say? So he came back. So he's waiting. He said, what did mother say? She says, I have not heard his laughter. Tell him to laugh louder. I have not heard it. So how do I know that he is laughing? She had such wonderful, that's why mother's company, people, why did they crave? She was not like a school teacher or a master that we have made her into. Yes, if there is falsehood, she would, her maximum annoyance was that she would become grave and serious because she was taking that burden. And only once somebody has remarked that he was telling lies. And all that the mother did while listening, she knew that he is telling lies. She says, she just turned her face away. That's all she did, nothing. He said, never in my life I felt more miserable. Nothing. She didn't say, you are telling lies, you are hiding from me, don't I know? Nothing. She just turned her face away. Just imagine divine turning the face away. That itself is. So this is how we need to understand. This just to understand well. And she says that I am grave and serious. Perhaps when I come down a rung, when someone is drowning or in difficulty, then one must come down from the bank into the water to pull him out. That is the reason. When the creation is in a special difficulty, one comes down a little, one pulls, so one becomes serious. But when all is going well, one can laugh and enjoy oneself. In fact, it could be said that all preaching, all exhortations, even all prayers and invocations come from what Sri Aurobindo calls the lower hemisphere. At one place or another, she will explain the difference. All these methods that we have been doing so far, the supramental method is different. It's from above downward. So she says, that's why he says open. There is no other method. Open. Because all these other methods, invocations, prayers, exhortations, preaching, come from the lower hemisphere. That is to say, one is still down below. It may be the summit, may be the frontier, it may be just the edge of this lower hemisphere. But one is still in the lower hemisphere. And as soon as one passes to the other side, all this seems, to say the least, useless and utmost, almost childish in the bad sense of the word. Ignorant, still ignorant. What is she bringing to the world? This is the highest that we can imagine. Puja, Path, Prarthana, Dhyan, Satsang, all this, Dhol Majira, everything, preaching. And it is very interesting to be still in this state where one is at times on one side, at times just on the border of the other. And then she takes this up at later on. So I'll wait for that time. And she describes what this new world is. So all these methods, and she's not invalidating them. She's simply saying one should understand what is what. Because we tend to say new creation also in the same way. Whereas new creation, when mother was asked how it is created, she says by the power of the faith and will. And she gives quotes from the Vedas. Sri Aurobindo's secret on the Vedas. If you don't have the faith and aspiration, persistent will, then you may sit in meditation, you may do all kinds of things. What a powerful. So, anyway, so we'll come to the next one. And of course he said that there is a difference when you are conscious of why you are here and when you are pushed toward the divine by crashing circumstances. One lives from day to day the events of each day. When one is very young, one thinks of playing, eating, and a little later of learning. And after that, one thinks of all the circumstances of life. But to put this problem to oneself, to confront this problem and ask oneself, but after all, why am I here? How many do that? There are people to whom this idea comes only when they are facing a catastrophe. When they see someone whom they love die, or when they find themselves in particularly painful and difficult circumstances, they turn back upon themselves. If they are sufficiently intelligent and ask themselves, but really, what is this tragedy we are living? And what's the use of it? And what is its purpose? And only at that moment does one begin the search to know. So she says this is one kind of search. She says about students also, that many of you are here, and if I ask you why you are here, so you will say probably, my parents are here, so I am here. But she says actually something else has brought you here, which you don't know, you don't understand. So she is asking us to become conscious. She says perhaps it is an indication of a destiny, of the purpose of my life. You should feel like this. Essentially, it is only when one has become aware of one's soul, has been identified with one's psychic being, that one can see in a single flash the picture of one's individual development through the ages. There is such a great difference between feeling vaguely, having a hesitant impression of something, of a force, a movement, an impulse, an attraction, of something which drives you in life. But it is still so vague, so uncertain, it is hazy. There is such a difference between this and having a clear vision, an exact perception, a total understanding of the meaning of one's life. And only then does one begin to see things as they are, not before. So she speaks of a vague aspiration, not even an aspiration. If most of the people are asked, why are you here? Maybe some would say, I like it. Some would say, because my child is here. Or my parents are here. Or my grandparents were here. That also I've heard. That my grandparents had come here. Some may say that, well, Mother and Sri Aurobindo, I feel attracted in some way. That's still a big thing. But to have a clear perception why one is here, this is what matters. That's where the whole difference comes. That's where the conscious aspiration is. She reminds us that people who try to understand about the working of the divine will, and they draw conclusions from outer circumstance. For instance, if they don't succeed in something, they say automatically, it is the mother's will that things should not happen this way. See, that means, ultimately, as mother says, if you follow this logic, you will end up blaming the divine for all the monstrous things in the world. If you fail in life, mother wanted you to fail. If you are ill, mother wanted you to be ill. Why? Because of this conception that everything that happens in the world is the result of the divine will. We have this, ek patta bhi nahi hilta hai. So naturally, whatever is happening in your life, but if that was the case, then what kind of divine will is there that this life is so monstrous? So the traditional answer is blame it on man. So then the problem is, if everything happens because of the divine will, then man's monstrosity has to be also put back there. Man is doing what he is doing because such is the divine will. And then you have to carry it to its ultimate logical extreme. So what does mother say? It is a great mistake to suppose that the divine will always acts openly in the world. I should say it is extremely rare for it to act openly. It always acts, but not openly. And when it acts openly, that is what men call miracles. So it does not act openly in the world. It acts through the veils of the ignorance. That's what Sri Aurobindo says in the mother. And the whole idea of sadhana is to remove these veils of ignorance so that it can act openly in us. And then life changes. It's not that the divine wants, conversations we had read in the previous book, volume 8. She says, my child, you should not feel that the divine wants to spoil you or rob you of the fun, or he wants to be a spoil sport, take away your happiness. Divine does not want that. Divine wants you to grow beautifully, happily. And then with that, she gives another very interesting guidance that how to know something is coming from the divine or not. So she says, because we want, I am going to make this choice. Is this choice coming from the divine? And they put sometimes themselves into a very miserable situation. For example, if you have to marry, I am giving this example, actual example, that two choices were there before a boy. So he said, how do I know which one to choose? So then he gave his solution. He says, I am putting both the names and I'll pick up one. I said, what if the divine has third one in mind? He says, what should I do? I said, I'll tell you what I did in the beginning. I didn't know. So, usual, you know, doctors or suitors, this, that. I was inwardly not interested. But still, I had that time Saraswati Ma, not, I didn't know about all this. Divine Mother, I. So, I put four, this is not a recommended thing, but I made four little chits and put before Mother Saraswati. So there were three girls, I wrote their names. And fourth was blank. And I was so happy when I picked up the blank one. I told my parents, see, I can't help it now, it is Mother Saraswati's blessing. How do you know? And besides, not about this person or that person. Probably the divine will say, if you don't marry, it is best. One girl actually told me, once she asked Pranabda, she said, Dada, I am ita bahire jachi, I am going out and I want to get married and I need your blessings. So he said in Bangla, I may not be able to reproduce exact, but that Bangla was very funny. But I'll try, it won't be exact words, but jete talte parve bhalo aur jadi na hove to anek bhalo. The more you delay your marriage, better. And if it doesn't happen, even better. Now you see, this is the blessing you are getting from a great, I mean, he was wonderful. So you see, how do we know? So then what do we do? Now people get paralyzed. Are Baba, whether you marry or don't marry, what matters is something else. And that's what she is reminding us. She says, the only thing that matters is the attitude with which they are done. The fact that you do something because that action is present there before you for one reason or another. That's what is why you are doing it. You want to marry, why you want to do it? You don't want to marry, why you want to do it? Maybe you don't want to marry not because of some great ideal or something, but because you just want to be like independent, the chada bachelor, I want to do whatever I feel like. Maybe that. You don't want to take any responsibility. So you're not going to evolve just because of that. It's okay. Nothing wrong with that. But that itself is not sufficient. But maybe because you don't want to have any kind of those attachments through which you may get and you want to keep yourself. But that's a rare thing. So she says, and that you are, so to say, always obliged to act as long as you are in the outer life. All this has a certain importance from the point of view of the management of life. If these acts are liable to have far-reaching consequences in life. So, and what are these? Which we consider as very important. They are not very important. Very important is your inner attitude. So, what are these? As for example, getting married or going to live in one place or another or taking up one occupation or another. These things are generally considered important. And they are so to a certain extent. But even for them, from the point of view of yoga, everything depends much more on the attitude one takes than on the thing itself. And so, above all, for all the very small actions of daily life, the importance is reduced to a minimum. How beautiful this is. How liberating, thank God. Because attitude is in your hands. And yes, and one should be very truthful and honest. Why one is going into whatever one is going into. no deception of the divine, no putting justifications. Well, there is something, it could be a tendency, whatever, and offer it to mother. That's the safest way. But covers, masks, so we can see how beautifully she is leading us step by step. And of course, illness and cure, we have read so many times, but it's always important to remind us very powerful this is. And okay, so I have already told you many a time that to seek suffering and pain is a morbid attitude. Some people take that attitude. We'll sleep on the floor, give our body pain. If you're very crude, then maybe it is required, because your crude consciousness needs the ascetic way. But otherwise, in this yoga, you don't need to do it. Not that you have to look for the best designer, what is it called, Dunlop pillow, I don't know, whatever it is. No, not that way. But you don't have to adopt methods which are going to be painful. Fasting. No, it's not that you progress spiritually by fasting. It may do good to your body, but we don't know. But to observe moderation, to get rid of greed, all this is far more important from a spiritual point of view. So, to seek suffering and pain is a morbid attitude, which must be avoided. But to run away from them through forgetfulness, through a superficial, frivolous movement, through diversion, is cowardice equally. I don't want to confront it. So, people do all kinds of much more worse stupid things. Parties, invariably. Very hollowness inside. And often, at least this used to be my experience of people going, and I used to say, aren't you happy just being yourself? When you are not happy being yourself, then you are seeking this kind of socialization. When pain comes, it comes to teach us something. The quicker we learn it, the more the need for pain diminishes. And when we know the secret, it will no longer be possible to suffer. For that secret reveals to us the reason, the cause, the origin of suffering, and the way to pass beyond it. Pause for a moment. What is the secret? Which pain comes to teach us. So what is the secret? The secret is to emerge from the ego. Invariably, get out of its prison. Unite ourselves with the divine, merge into him, not to allow anything to separate us from him. Today we read, no, somebody posted on the group something very beautiful. Mother is saying 72, something very beautiful, where she says, you know, divine alone, all the rest, this, that, 100 things, 1,000 things, what matters is how much we have been, we are united with the divine. Leave all the rest. They'll come. Turn it into a journey. Turn everything into a journey. As Shubhendu says, the rule of divine living is to turn all things to honey. Whatever comes in life, in the way, everything should become a path to join with the divine. Because ultimately that's what matters. Then, once one has discovered this secret, and realizes it in one's being, pain loses its justification and suffering disappears. It is an all-powerful remedy, not dispensed anywhere. In dispensary, you may get the opposite. After some interaction, you may wonder who should be more egoistic. So you don't get it anywhere, this remedy. Not only in the deeper parts of the being, in the soul, in the spiritual consciousness, but also in life and in the body. Many times patients come, they give this remedy to the doctor. And the doctor cannot take it because it's a bitter pill. Patient comes and says, no, 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 I don't believe in your treatment. And doctor is very hurt. You see, he lost a chance of overcoming the ego. Many such things. This, if you look at it like that, life is so wonderful. You are playing with the divine. You think you are curing a patient, but who knows, the patient came to cure you. To show you that, look, boy, you have a problem. No, you continue to learn from all the interactions. And this is how. There is no illness, no disorder which can resist the discovery of this secret and the putting of it into practice, not only in the higher parts of the being, but in the cells of the body. Cells of the body are extremely afraid. But for that, one must be neither cowardly nor fearful. When the physical disorder comes, how are we going to apply? See, she is telling us all the steps. Not just for these three steps, you can do a whole workshop. Charge some, I don't know how many dollars, and put a little bit package. Packaging is, you know, today we'll grow in awareness. So, tell me, what is your suffering? Now everybody is thinking, what are the things? 10 things which made you suffer in life. You are going, beating around the bush, half a day gone. You have listed all your sufferings. What are the causes? So half a day gone in all kinds of intermediary causes. Second day, ultimately you touch the ego. Arey bhai, shuru mein bata do. But then you can't charge money, you know, you have three paragraphs of the mother put. So you beat around the bush and ultimately through some meditative practice, all this will be inter alia. And at the end you will say, well, it's a ego. So the person will ask that, mother, okay. Mother will explain in a very beautiful way. So what is to be done when I have a physical illness? So she would say, when the physical disorder comes, see, she is giving us all this free of cost. Still we don't read. I have not felt a greater tragedy of at least those who have turned to Mother and Sri Aurobindo, at least read the collected works of the Mother. But everybody wants to read the Life Divine and doesn't want to proceed unless one has read the Life Divine. So, you are moving. You want to understand Shiva without going through Parvati. You won't. That's why in Vrindavan you have this, no? That you cannot, this is a teaching there, that you cannot understand Krishna or go to him without Radharani. That's why if you go to Vrindavan, they all will say Radhe, 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 Radhe. Vrindavan is Krishna's bhumi. But you cannot understand Krishna unless Radha's grace is there. So if you read the mother, you will understand the mother plus Sri Aurobindo. It's a, along with that, you'll understand the Life Divine. See the Gita, we read one passage. Then you will see, oh, this is what the Gita is teaching you. So, she says, when the physical disorder comes, one must not be afraid. One must not run away from it. Must face it with courage, calmness, confidence. So how do these things come? Use anything which can make you feel that. Keep a blessing packet. Keep her picture. Look at her picture. Remind yourself, mother is with me. She's in my heart. All these, several, each one. Now the processes each one will devise. You will discover your own process. Play the mother's music. Whatever way. Stay in the company of those or listen to those who will inspire trust and confidence in you. Whatever way, cultivate calmness, courage, faith. So she's saying all these things. With the certitude that illness is a falsehood. And that if one turns entirely in full confidence with a complete quietude to the divine grace, it will settle in these cells. As it is established in the depths of the being. Open these cells. Ma. This is the Yajnavedi. Turn this body into your Yajnavedi. All my cells are yours. Do with it whatever you want. Now, some people say, what if I die? Are you? This is a beautiful way to die. Actually, if at all you have to, at one place he says, in prayer of, I think, March 17, 1913, she says precisely this. Abandon your body completely to the divine. If you leave your body, this is the best possible condition to leave the body. And, I mean, for whatever reason. And if you come out of it, this is the best way to come out of it. But for that, there should be no fear. If you are afraid, take the medicines. Don't live in two worlds. Because then fear is a very dangerous. If you are afraid, take the medicine. It's okay. Not that mother will be angry. Not that these two people turn into a play of the ego. I will never take medicine. No, not like that. Be like a child. So she says, call the grace. and then it will settle and the cells themselves will share in the eternal truth and delight. So she teaches us a way. Everything she has given away, how to get rid of pain, how to, you know, cure all these things. But obviously, it has to be applied. There's a very interesting, one of my favorite sentences, so I just want to read that. Someone asked her passages about independence and independence, service, unity, all these things. So mother says something very interesting. Independence. I remember having heard an old occultist and sage give a beautiful reply to someone who said, I think it was Inayat Khan, but I may be mistaken. Mother had met Inayat Khan when she was in Paris. And he had also come here. And he had played for Sri Aurobindo. So he was a mystic. He had occult capacities also. So he said, someone who said, I want to be independent. I am an independent being. I exist only when I am independent. So the sage, when somebody came and told the sage this, and the other answered him with a smile, then that means that nobody will love you. Because if someone loves you, you immediately become dependent on this love. It is a beautiful reply. For it is indeed love which leads to unity. And it is unity which is the true expression of freedom. And so those who in the name of their right to freedom claim independence turn their backs completely on this true freedom, for they deny love. I hope the youngsters in today's times are listening. But then deformation comes. He says the deformation comes from constraint. One cannot love through compulsion. You cannot be compelled to love. It is no longer love. Therefore, as soon as compulsion intervenes, it becomes a falsehood. All the movements of the inner being must be spontaneous movements. With that spontaneity which comes from an inner harmony and understanding, from a voluntary self-giving, from a return to the deeper truth, the reality of being, the origin and the goal. As I said, we are going to go slow. Every conversation here is beautiful. Jema.